This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, somehow ends up in first class for the price of coach? Well, Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like which travel cards earn their keep and which are just heavy, shiny metal, or how to avoid paying for upgrades that you won't use. They also talk about which airport lounges are worth it and which ones are basically just, you know, free Wi-Fi and chairs. Travel smarter and spend less with help from Nerd Wallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
And welcome to the Fromer Travel Show. I'm your host, Pauline Fromer. I come from a family with restless leg syndrome. I'm not talking about the medical condition that keeps you awake at night. I'm talking about the fact that we all have this urge to get out there and see the world. I inherited this from my father. He probably inherited this from his parents, who were immigrants to the United States, and I've passed it along to my two children. I have one of them on the line now.
Hi.
Her name is... Hi, her name is Beatrix Stewart Fromer. She is getting a master's in public health with a focus on global health. And that has allowed her recently to really get out there and see the world. So, Trixie, welcome to the Fromer Travel Show.
Thank you for having me. This is very exciting. I feel like I'm finally joining on in the family business a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be a doctor eventually, yeah. So you're not going to be in the family business. Going a different direction. But because you're getting this degree, you have to travel. And you recently spent several months in Ghana. What were you doing there?
Yeah. So for any public health degree, master's of public health that we have in the United States, you have to do a practical part of your degree. So every single person in the U.S. who gets an MPH has to work for a certain number of hours for an organization, making some sort of deliverable for them. So some tangible product for an organization relating to public health. I luckily was able to start my degree early in my undergraduate years, so I could take time off from taking classes and go abroad to do this practical part of my degree. So I was working with an organization called Child Family Health International, which has sites all around the world. But I chose Accra, Ghana, because it's a large capital city that I've heard a lot about in sub-Saharan Africa, where I've also spent some time as an undergraduate student in Uganda. So I wanted a bit of a different feeling, more of an urban place. And I was able to do my deliverables there. So I was working with a public children's hospital called Princess Marie Louise Children's Hospital. In Accra, and I was working with them on a post-discharge malarial chemo prevention initiative for pediatric patients. That sounds like
Can
a lot.
Can you translate that very briefly into English?
Yes. I had no idea what any of those words meant before I really started researching for this project. Pretty much what it means is that, especially in pediatric patients where there's the highest mortality from malaria, it's where the highest burden of disease still remains all across the malaria belt of the world. After the first most severe hospitalization that a child will have when they have malaria, they're actually not out of the dark once they're discharged. A big side effect of malaria is anemia, and children can have a lot of complications from severe malarial anemia. And so in that post-discharge period, they're at high risk for reinfection and other complications that could then lead to mortality from disease. And there's a new chemopreventive drug called PDMC, post-discharge malarial chemoprevention, that's proven really, really effective around the world at protecting patients in that post-discharge period. And so my job was to create a training manual for the physicians of this hospital and to write a grant and project proposal to try to get the funds to bring this treatment to the pediatric hospital.
Wow.
I spent a lot of time talking to physicians at Princess Marie Louise who treat malaria. I worked in the malnutrition ward for a very long time, seeing patients who had severe acute malnutrition, as well as a lot of complications such as anemia, which comes with it, and malaria. And then got to researching and made this training and wrote the project and grant proposal. And those
very
were my
cool. Flip. Very cool. Okay, so that's the medical side of your travels.
Yes.
And I promise that's the end of the medical side, because we really want to know, as travelers, should we be looking at Accra and Ghana in general? What is it like? What's there to see and do if you're not working at Princess Marie Louise Hospital?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I think you should be looking there. And something I was really surprised about were actually the number of foreigners who I met in Ghana, and the number of people who were coming to do various jobs and then going out, and we'd meet at different places. There's a lot to do. It's a rapidly growing city. You see different parts of the city that are really rapidly urbanizing and developing into kind of what we see as modern day cities. You know, there are skyscrapers coming up in some parts. But I will say it has a lot of the less developed aspects too that have been there for a really long time. And I think that it creates a city where there's a real duality. You're weaving in and out of neighborhoods that have different levels of development, different types of houses that you see people live in. And it's very interesting, which brings me to why I especially think that Ghana is somewhere you should go, is the history of it.
Before you leave the houses, though, okay. I mean, so what does that mean? What can you give a little description of what it looks like to walk down the street in Accra?
Yeah, well, again, really depends on the neighborhood.
Sure.
You can go to East Lagoon, which is one of the nicest neighborhoods in Ghana, and you'll see gated houses with, you know, they have fences, doorbells that are electronic. All the houses have AC, very colorful, beautiful. They could be on the water. There are luxury apartments. Or you could be going along the street and see a house that looks more like four pieces of tin that have been put together to make a house, or these little concrete boxes on the side of the street that people will live in as well. A lot of people there actually live in the same place they work. So their home will be a shop by day, and then they'll put everything aside and put a mattress down and have that be the home by night. So you're seeing a lot of things like that as well, which is cool.
Yeah, really interesting. Very interesting. So back to the history. Mm-hmm. What history do you see when you're there? Is it only the history of the country, or is it more world history?
I mean, it's definitely world history. Ghana was one of the capitals of the transatlantic slave trafficking system. And so if you go to Ghana, I mean, you're going to see so much of that history and so much of the people that helped liberate Ghana from its colonialist history. So you see Kwame Nkrumah Park, you know, it's a memorial dedicated to Kwame Nkrumah, who's a huge public figure that we know. And you have a museum about him, this big structure of him. You have Independence Square.
You know, I don't know his background. Who was he?
So Kwame Nkrumah was a Ghanaian politician. he served, I'm pretty sure, as prime minister of the Gold Coast, exactly when it gained independence from Britain. So he was the first prime minister and president of Ghana. I don't know the exact years, but it was in the late 1950s that Ghana gained its independence, and he was its prime minister for, I think, the next 10 years, and became a bigger political figure on the global scale, too. You can see him speaking at a lot of UN events, meeting with politicians from all around the world. And then even when I went into Namibia, you'll see Kwame Nkrumah Avenue in Windhoek, its capital, as well as a lot of other politicians that have streets named after them. I think he's hailed as one of the big leaders of African independence and liberation of the 1950s, 60s period.
Right. Interesting. Okay. So you have that history. Tell us a little bit about seeing the slave history in Ghana.
That was a very heavy day, but I'm glad I did it. And I think that it's really, really valuable to go do. I think just in the way that people go to Europe to learn about history of the World War II era, it is just as important to go to places like Ghana and learn about other parts of our history, like the transatlantic slave trafficking time. In Gold Coast are where most of these slave castles are. There are a few in the city, but the huge famous ones that are most known and kind of notorious are in Cape Coast. So Cape Coast is around, really depends on the traffic, a 4-ish hour drive from Accra. Its roads are being repaired right now, so hopefully in the next few years, the ride there will get a little bit smoother. But you go and you're guided through by really knowledgeable guides who also are not only knowledgeable about the history of it, but really compelling too. We got taken through the quarters where people would be held before being taken through the door of no return. Most of these castles, the shoreline has receded, but they paint a picture of how the sea used to come up right to the castle. So boats would just be waiting outside. And as soon as you went through the door of no return, there was kind of no returning, no going back.
Right. How long would people be held?
It really depended. Could be anywhere from a week to months. There were different quarters for women and men. A lot of the atrocities, including a lot of sexual assault, was described with the women and slaveholders, and how if they became pregnant, they would be taken care of for that amount of time. And then both them and their children would go back into holding to be taken overseas. Again, it was very heavy to learn about that history. And I think as somebody from European descent, especially on my father's side, you know, you carry that kind of burden of, wow, my ancestors participated in this. And it was definitely shameful and heavy to think about, but I think really important to sit in that discomfort. Again, making sure that nothing like this can ever happen again.
You call them castles, which seems to imply they're grand looking.
Oh,
what
yes.
What did they physically look like?
They're beautiful. And it's really interesting because they're so beautiful and such ugly things happened there. But you will go to Elmina Castle, and it's a big white building that has cannons going out from it, and these kind of quarters that all the upper level captains lived in that look out over the water and over the little town. And it is beautiful. You stand there and you look over just a beautiful ocean. There are trees on the side, and the building itself is white and grand. And
So it looks like something you'd see in Europe, I would think, or no, or more colonial.
It's not a castle that you would see in Scotland or England. Like a lot of that architecture is different, but it is a multi-tiered building that's completely white and has a grand staircase going up and windows, things like that. But it is more of just a big building that's kind of square shaped.
I would guess that the holding cells for the people who were being enslaved those areas were not beautiful.
Not at all. Most of them were completely underground. Huh. And they have kept pretty much everything to its original form. And so they explain how the floors you're walking on, they had cleared some portions away to see the brick of the floor underneath. But then there would be maybe this much of something covering the rest of it, which you then learn is remains of waste, vomit, defecation. They didn't let people go anywhere. And so from being stepped on so many times, that became the new coating of the floor that you are walking over as you learn about it.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a very heavy day. Yes. Did you do only that day, or did you see other parts of the Gold Coast?
Of Cape Coast?
Cape Coast, sorry.
Yeah. We also saw other parts of Cape Coast. We did a heavier portion of the day, and then we went to the rainforest there, where you can do a canopy walk through the trees, which was really beautiful. I mean, we were all kind of talking about the irony of the beginnings and ends to our day. But yeah, we went also to kind of the tourist attractions there, which are mostly the rainforest hiking and canopy walk.
Now, people think Africa, they assume you're going to see the big five. You know, when you're in the rainforest, what animals did you see, or did you see any animals?
I didn't see many animals. It was actually raining the day that we went. And so we were kind of walking through Missy. I'm very scared of snakes. I was told that we could see a snake, but we didn't see a snake, thankfully. We didn't see much. A lot of geckos, but geckos are everywhere there. I didn't see much wildlife in the rainforest, but I also wasn't there for very long. And it's a place you more go to see the nature than animals. I know there are places in Ghana where you can do safaris, but I didn't see many animals in Ghana when I was there.
Before we leave Ghana, let's describe some of the, what's the food like? What's the temperatures like? I mean, what is it like to be in Accra?
Yeah. So something about me is that I'm a fall spring person. I'm okay with winter, but summer is a little hard for me. And boy, oh boy, Ghana is hot. And I was there in the wintertime. So one of my classmates who I was there with, her family is from Accra, and she'll come at other parts of the year too, and was describing the weather we were having, which was around 85 to 95 degrees Fahrenheit and very humid, as heavenly. She was like, this is great. The humidity is down. Like, this is the only time I want to come. I personally was profusely sweating more than I ever have, but it's very beautiful if you're going to the beach. I would say when I was in the hospital with no air conditioning, that's where it definitely was a little bit stifling. But the people I was there working with were all laughing at how hot I was. So I think for them, they had gotten used to it.
Good idea is to bring electrolytes with you, I guess, if you're sweating that much.
Yes, that is something that I wish I had brought were electrolytes, because you can find them at certain like very westernized food stores, but they are 10 times more expensive than you'd find them in the States even. So very hot, very sunny. There are beach clubs everywhere that are... Well, some of them are free to enter. Some of them have an entry fee. I tried a few of them out. We landed on Sandbox, was our favorite beach club there, Sandbox Beach Club. We would go like every Friday. There's no entry fee. They give you a free towel as well. There's a pool. It overlooks the beach. The water in off of Accra, you're not really supposed to swim in. It's pretty dirty. There's a lot of trash pollution in the ocean that you can see. So it was nice to be somewhere where there was a pool as well. But there are all of these different beach clubs along the beach. But there's also Labadi Beach, which is a beach you can go to that is also pretty popular. Just people don't swim in the water that much. And there's even really great weekend trips. So you have the Volta region. We went to Boti Falls one weekend, which is these two waterfalls. You can hike up to Umbrella Rock, which is a rock that looks like an umbrella, like it's named. It's a bit of an intense hike in the heat, but we learned after the fact you can also drive up to Umbrella Rock.
So we do that next time.
I'm glad we picked the hike, but some people regretted it for sure. But there's a lot of natural beauty in the area surrounding Accra as well.
Okay, and what's the food like?
Oh, sorry. Food is great. A lot of jollof rice, fried chicken. You have kenke, banku, fufu, which are things called swallow, which is pretty much, they're each made of slightly different things, but kind of a porridge / polenta carb that you dip into stews and then swallow, like eat it and swallow it, but you don't really chew. So a meal I had a lot was ground nut soup, which is a peanut soup, and either fufu or kenke or bangku.
What's fufu kenke? What are those?
What I was just talking about, the swallows.
Oh, I see. I see.
So it was very good. A lot of stews. Chicken was definitely the main protein we had a lot of. Jollof rice is really yummy. It's kind of like what I could compare it to is like stir-fried rice with a little bit of a kick to it. Very spicy food a lot of the time. People also laughed at me at my inability to handle some of the spice.
Have you gotten better at spice or not really?
I think a little bit, definitely. Yeah. By the end, there weren't tears streaming out of my eyes anymore.
Wow. And I know you went to the theater there, which is a little different than the theater here. Tell us about the show you saw.
Yes. On Valentine's Day, we went to the theater, the Opera House in Accra, and we saw, I guess you could call it a romantic comedy about this influencer whose husband was a famous boxer, and he had known that she had had an affair years ago. It was very dramatic and unlike any theater I had seen in the U.S. It was hilarious, and there were ad breaks. But afterwards,
breaks for advertising.
Yeah, there were ads on the wall that they would display, and then the actors would come back out. Getting popcorn for that is like no line. You had to fight tooth and nail to get to get the popcorn, and we had popcorn kebabs and. Popcorn, kebabs, and ciders was what we ate during this show. And afterwards, everyone walked out and thought we were going to go. But then they started playing music and everyone started dancing. And suddenly there was a huge dance party in the Opera House right after. And wow. It was really fun.
Huh. Well, it sounds amazing. It sounds fascinating. So that was Accra.
Yes.
The next episode with Trixie is going to be about her trip, which continued. She decided to stay in the region and just travel a bit more. So we'll tell you about that next week. That's it for this episode of the Fromers Travel Show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, give us a nice review. Tell your friends. Please subscribe. And to those who are traveling, may I wish you a hearty bon voyage. I'll see you next week. Sour candy on
watching cable. Well, it feels so far away. All the channels seem the same.
Quick question. Do you want travel tips from people who have actually been there?
Our show is co-hosted by Tim Johnson, an award-winning travel journalist who's been to more than 145 countries around the world. And I'm David Brody, the other co-host who's been travel podcasting for 20 years while traveling to 50-plus countries around the world.
In about 10 or 20 minutes per show, we break down a destination with the kind of insight you usually only get from long guidebooks or hours of research.
So if you want expert advice, zero fluff, and travel inspiration that you can actually use, search for Travel in 10 wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can also find us at voyescape.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Siegel, and man, oh man, do I love talking about travel. You think I'd get enough of it, touring the world as a stand-up comedian, or just going off on my own personal adventures around the world? No, when I get home, I still have to talk about it. That's how much I love travel. So every week I sit down with a friend, a travel expert, influencer, expat, or anyone from any walk of life who shares my passion for travel. So if you want to hear a fun, casual, off-the-cuff chat about travel from people who love it, listen to the Travel Tales podcast with me, Mike Siegel, wherever you get your podcasts.